We've been marching through Easter from the perspective of Jesus. We're deviating from that just slightly here today. I want to talk today about Holy Saturday. Holy Saturday. That is the day between, so there's Maundy Thursday, and then there's Good Friday, and then there's Saturday, and then there's Easter. Okay? Most people, if you're Protestants, don't realize that Holy Saturday is itself a holiday. It's a holy day. It's part of the build-up to Easter. It's sometimes called Great Saturday, Great Sabbath, Saturday of Glory, Black Saturday, Easter Eve. There's lots of names for it. But there is this special day in the middle of the Easter festivities called Holy Saturday. Most of us have never really thought about Holy Saturday. But I want to ask a question today. Why is it there? I mean, why doesn't Jesus just rise from the dead the next day? Like, why is Saturday important to the story? And why is it special? And why is it important? And so we're going to sort of wrestle with that. But there's kind of a tricky part to how we wrestle with that. And that is that it's been associated very often with some theology and some actions that are a little confusing and a little unclear, and so I want to sort of wrestle with it a little bit. The Apostles' Creed was not written by the apostles. You should probably know that. It was written about 300 years after the apostles, in the 300s, and it was really about the church trying to get back to what the apostles were teaching. What were the apostles really talking about? And so they were trying to get back to something, and they were trying to battle certain misbeliefs at the time. Two parts of this creed tend to bother people, particularly in Protestant churches. Okay, what's the first one? Catholic. Some people are like, well, how come we're Presbyterian and we're saying the Holy Catholic Church? But if you notice, the word Catholic is lowercase. Okay, and the word Catholic just means universal. That's what it means. And the Catholic Church is so called the Catholic Church because at one time it was the only church. Okay? So when we say Catholic, which is lowercase, we mean really like the universal church, like the church in all times and in all places together as one. That's what Catholic means. So sometimes they'll translate that as universal church. But it's a little C, everybody. You can relax about that. You can say it. It's fine. Perhaps the hardest one to deal with is the other one, I think, is really hard in this, is the idea that he descended to heaven, or he descended to the dead. We got to talk about this a little bit, because this is often associated with Holy Saturday. But what does it mean that he descended to the dead, or he descended into hell? What can we say about that biblically and theologically? And again, it's a little complicated and it's a little unclear. So open your minds, buckle your seatbelts. We got a little bit of work to do to figure this out and to see. And I'm going to try to share with you my views on some of this. Okay, there are several ways that the church has understood that Jesus descended to hell. You can think of it like four levels, like a basic level, and then sort of building on top of that. There's four levels. On its most basic level, what the creed is really saying is that Jesus actually suffered and he actually died. That's what it means. He ascended to hell. He actually suffered, he actually died. Okay, at the time, there were people who, at the time they followed the creed, there were people who were trying to say that Jesus wasn't really human. That he was just God. And God can't suffer, right? God can't die. How can God die? And so they made these actual accusations that Jesus didn't really suffer. He was just pretending to suffer. That he didn't really die. And the church really went against that and made a creed in a big part to say, no, what does the creed say? He suffered under Pontius Pilate. He didn't pretend to suffer. He didn't almost suffer. He actually suffered as a human being under Pontius Pilate. He actually died. In fact, he descended to hell. He actually went to the place that you go when you die. And you should probably know that when they say hell here, the word is Hades in the earliest versions of the creed we have. And that's a little different than the hell. Okay, in the ancient world, they believed that when you died, you went down to some kind of lower space. Your soul went down. In Hebrew, it's called Sheol. So if you were here for the Jonah sermon, we were talking about this a little bit. Greco-Roman sort of thinking, it was called Hades. Hades was the realm of the dead. And normally in the realm of the dead, there are two parts. One is called paradise. The other is called torment. Okay, so they're both in Hades. That's the weird thing for us to think. So our later understanding of it, and the New Testament is getting into this, the idea of heaven and hell are both in Hades. That's really weird for us to think, but that is kind of how it was. And you can see that really clearly in a parable Jesus taught in Luke 16. He talked about this parable of a rich man and Lazarus. And so there was this rich man, and he ignored this man named Lazarus. The rich man has no name. The poor man has a name. And he ignores on earth this man, and then they both die. And here's how Jesus describes it in a parable. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. Okay, so the important thing here is to understand for this description that both paradise, Abraham's side, and torment are in the same basic location. Everybody see that? Okay, the rich man can see Abraham from where he is. And in the story, he actually talks to Abraham and tries to talk to Lazarus from where he is. So heaven and hell, torment, and the text even says, where Jesus said, in Hades, where he was in torment, right? He's in the underworld, in the torment part. Everybody got that? So if you go back and read that parable, it's really great. The rich man begs Abraham to have Lazarus bring him some water, and Abraham says no. The rich man asks Abraham to send Lazarus to back to earth to warn his family. And he figures if somebody comes back from the dead, they'll surely believe. And Abraham says to him, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced when even if someone is raised from the dead. Now on the week before Easter, that should make you think. Right? If they don't believe Moses and the prophets, they're not going to believe when somebody raises from the dead. But so I hope you see the Easter connection. But notice the rich man can talk to the people in paradise from where he is. With this understanding, we can see how if we want to say Jesus actually died, then we have to say he went to the realm of the dead, to Hades. So I think on its most basic level, that's absolutely true. Jesus suffered, he died, and he goes to this place, Hades. But how far then can you push this idea? So sort of the next layer to that is some people say that he went to Hades for torment. In other words, if Jesus is dying the penalty for sin and for death, then part of that penalty is in the afterlife. And so if Jesus is going to die for us, he's also got to be punished in hell for us. Now here's my problem with that. Is my problem is Jesus on the cross says it is finished. He doesn't say it's almost done. Like I'm a day away, everybody. No, he says it's finished. That tends for me to think that the punishment is done. So whatever hell Jesus goes through it on the cross, in my opinion, not in the afterworld, in the afterlife. I don't think Jesus is going to be punished anymore. And when he says it's finished, it is finished. Now, there's a third potential layer that some people say, and we'll look at the scriptures here in a second. Some people say that what Jesus does is on Holy Saturday, that I'm associated with, he goes to proclaim to the dead what he's done. But these people who are down in Hades in torment, they don't know what's happened up above. And so he goes to proclaim that. And some people say that the text says spirits. So does that mean the dead? Does that mean fallen spirits, like fallen angels? It's a little unclear. The fourth layer, and this you get into a little bit more of a big C Catholic sort of doctrine. Some people say that he actually descended to hell to rescue those who were trapped there. The belief is that this place called Limbo, sometimes called Abraham's side because of the parable you just read. So there's a suggestion that maybe those who died before Jesus died they can't get to heaven because Jesus hasn't died for them yet.
So they're sort of held in a place called limbo until the time at which Jesus can free them.
You want to understand this, there's a lot of really great art about the harrowing of hell, including on the front of your bulletin.
You look at the front of your bulletin,
there is a painting, it's a fresco by a man named Fra Angelico from the 1430s. Normally Jesus is either kicking down the door or he's on the front there, I see him standing on the gates. Okay, and the devil is sort of in the corner. Everybody see that to the left? And then those are saints down there. You know they're saints because they have halos. Okay? But those are halos of Old Testament figures of people who have died. Okay, so the oldest one, who's the oldest character in the Bible? At this point, it's Adam. Okay, that's Adam. Adam's first. He's found some pants. Okay? He's really clothed, and he's the oldest character in limbo. And then next to him is a much younger character than in this artwork is John the Baptist. Okay, John the Baptist, who's beheaded earlier. And then you can see several other characters. Abel has a bloodied head from his brother killing him. Moses has sort of orange, you can't quite make this out as well. And there's another character, you can see their head, it's got a crown, and that's David. The idea is that these characters are waiting in limbo for Jesus to actually die so they can be free. Now, this idea comes out with these last couple layers of this idea. Come out of several scriptures, but I want to read them for you, and I don't think they're very clear. So see if you can make sense of this, because I have a lot of trouble. These are much debated texts. But you can look them up later. Ephesians 4, 7 through 10 is the first one. Paul writes, "But grace has been given to each one of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore it says, when he ascended on high, he led a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men." In saying he ascended, what does it mean? But that he also descended into lower regions, the earth. He who descended is the one who ascended far above the heavens, that he might fill all things. So, does this mean that he goes to earth and frees captives? Well, here's the challenge, is it actually is associated with the ascension, not only Saturday. And if it says he descends to the earth, that doesn't necessarily mean into the earth. It just means, like, maybe that's just the incarnation. I don't think that doctrine there is very clear at all. Then, the other two verses that get associated with this is 1 Peter. 1 Peter 3, 18 and 19. "For Christ also suffered for sins once and for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, in order to bring you to God. He was put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit, in which he also went and made a proclamation to the spirits in prison." So this is where this idea of the proclamation to the spirits in prison comes from. But again, what spirits? Is that angels? Is that those who have died? Is those who are... Like, how do you make that leap that they're the ones who die and are stuck there because they were saints before? 1 Peter 4, 6 doesn't help the case. It says, "For this reason, the gospel was proclaimed even to the dead, so that though they have been judged in the flesh, as everyone is judged, they might live in the spirit as God does." So does that mean he proclaims this to the dead who've already died? Does that mean that we're dead? Like, that's good. The spirit, like, we are dead. So how do you understand those things? I think this is confusing. And I think trying to put a big leap onto these sort of levels is very difficult for me. Notice a couple things. I mean, notice, number one, that this is not very clear. And then if you're going to really build a lot of theology on this, you can see where the doctrine of purgatory comes from in some of this stuff. But it's cheap. It's questionable. Notice also that none of those verses talk about Holy Saturday at all. But one seems associated with the ascension, not with this Holy Saturday. So the idea that Jesus descends to hell and actually does this rescue mission on Saturday, it doesn't really say that. Actually, the creed doesn't either. Not necessarily tie that to Holy Saturday. I'm also struck by the words of Jesus on the cross to the thief. Do you remember what he said?
today you will be with me in paradise. He doesn't say, tomorrow I'll pick you up in heaven. Right? Tomorrow I'll get you in limbo and then we'll go. Well, today you'll be with me in paradise. That makes some of those interpretations kind of different. I also think purgatory is just doctrinally very hard to get to. Okay, we sing a song that says, Jesus paid it all. Okay? If Jesus paid it all, then I don't have to pay more after I die. Right? That's the trouble. So if Jesus paid it all, and then I have to do a couple more years of service after I die before I can get to the good place, that doesn't mean that I messed up. What that actually theologically means is that Jesus didn't pay enough. I have a real problem with that. The idea that if Jesus paid it all, I shouldn't have to do any more. And I have a real problem saying that Jesus didn't pay enough for me to get there. And I've got to pay some more. Theologically, I have trouble with that. So here's what I think. After all this zigging and zagging, right? I do not think Jesus did a harrowing of hell on his holy Saturday the way the cover of your bulletin is. Okay, the only layer that I can really get behind is this idea of the first layer, that Jesus really died, that he really suffered. Everything past that tends to get a little suspect for me, that I have trouble pushing what's going on. I don't know if it's fallen angels or I just can't make a lot of sense of it, other than what I think the creed is saying at the most basic level, that Jesus really suffered and that he really died. Now, some people have gone so far as to want to take the line he descended to hell out of the creed. They just skip it completely. But I don't like that either, because I do think Jesus goes through hell. I just think it's on the cross. I think he's on the cross. He's fully human. I think that's what the creed was defending. He's fully human, so he does suffer, and he does really die. And that all happens on the cross. He goes through hell on the cross. And so I don't think historically it happened the way the cover of your bulletin said it happens. But also, I love the symbolism on the front of that bulletin. Right, there's a symbolic side of this that I really like. Okay, number one, that none of those saints can get to heaven without Jesus. Right, that none of them earn their way. Right, that it is by grace alone, even for David, even for Moses, even for John the Baptist. That's the only way I've got a chance. So I love that image. And I love the image of Jesus kicking down the doors to hell, right? Because it means whatever hell there is in this world, Jesus will go to that one. Right? Whatever hell you are going through, Jesus has been through it, and he is with you in the middle of it. So are you in pain? Under attack? Are you suffering? Are you betrayed or abused? Do you have fear, anxiety, and pride? Have you experienced grief and loss? Jesus went through all that hell. And Jesus goes with you through all that hell. And it means hell doesn't get to win. And I really do love that imagery. But for some of you that feel trapped, some of you that feel imprisoned, that is exactly what happens. It happens on the cross. But I also understand really why the church associated with it and celebrated it and understood it and thought about it on Holy Saturday. Because the Holy Saturday is the day to rest the thing. The only thing we know happens on Holy Saturday in the Bible is that the Pharisees posted guards so the body can't be stolen. And one of the Gospels tell us that the disciples had said that. They rested. Can you imagine being a disciple that day? Can you imagine Jesus had been crucified the day before? We know on Sunday that they had the doors locked because they were scared they were next. The fear, the questioning, trying to make sense of what just happened. See, there's got to be a Saturday in there so that we can really reflect on what the cross does before Easter. There's a need for a pause between Good Friday and Easter. A And I'm just telling you right now, many of us don't do it. Many of us, we barely think about Good Friday. In our church, we do Maundy Thursday. We don't even do a Good Friday service. But a lot of times, we're not thinking through it. The intention is for us to go through this week with Jesus. We start up on Sunday, but Good Friday, we'll be thinking about what Jesus is going through on the cross. And Saturday, pause to think about what's going on that day. So that when you come here next Sunday for Easter, you can be excited. Now, one more symbol. And Dr. Leonard Sweet talks about this. But there's this line in John 12 where Jesus said, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." My teacher, Len, wonders if one of the important things about Saturday is that Jesus is in the earth. Like, we tend to think about the cross like, oh, Jesus died on the cross for my sins. One of the other things that's going on in the cross is that Jesus came, why? John says, "For God so loved the world that this earth is broken." That this earth is broken by sin. If you don't think that, look around. Okay? Our earth is crying out. What does it mean that Jesus was in the earth for that day? What if we thought of Holy Saturday as like a Christian earth day? And what Jesus is really doing is he's like a seed going into the earth to reseed the new creation. That part of what's happening is not just that we're healed, but that the earth is healed. What if Holy Saturday is our moment to really think about how Jesus died on the cross, not just but for me, but for my world? How do you look at the world differently if Jesus died for it? How do you look at the planet differently if Jesus died for this planet? Right? Well, maybe Holy Saturday is our chance to think about that. So here's my challenge for you. This week, if you can come to Maundy Thursday, please do. We're having time. If you can read through your text on Friday, on Good Friday, about the cross, and really think about it. But make sure you take Holy Saturday to rest and to think and to reflect on the fathoms to which Jesus goes because he loves you. The hell that Jesus goes through because he loves you. So that if you're in hell or you feel like you're in prison and you feel like you can't go on, you remember Christ's love for you. Then, next week, we're going to come really celebrate Easter. Right? And there's going to be a joy here.